Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 28th of September, 2020. And we saw a pretty decent close to the week last week with the U.S. indices closing up towards some interesting local resistance. You can see that on slide one. Actually, we're touching it overnight here into Monday's session. And the S&P around 3,300 plus, and you see that downside level is so key around 3,200 and near the prior major high for the cycle. So we're watching this level, and you can see that the next level up above that is just north of 3,400. Very similar setup in the NASDAQ 100. And a positive tone in the Asian session, perhaps in part due to this Evergrande story. We talked about this last week, a massive real estate developer in Hong Kong with some mainland China links, where their bonds had come under very sudden and very vicious pressure. There was a rally in, for example, a 2024 bond from Evergrande that rallied 20%. The equity was up at 1.15% when I looked at it this morning, and the company was quoted as saying it's making progress in debt reduction. One wonders if there's maybe some kind of official focus and support behind the scenes, but it doesn't matter. I think, of course, at the margin, this helps sentiment. But I think in our internal call, Peter, and there's so much we have to talk about on this, but a little bit of a sense of things aren't right here in a lot of pockets around the world, EM. Just a sense that European banks that behind the scenes, some of the risk appetite measures are looking a bit shaky here.
Okay, let's take one thing at a time.
Yeah, John. I just threw you a big messy ball of stuff there. But yeah, let's pull it apart one by one.
Okay, it's okay. So let's start with the Evergrande, and which is on slide two on today's slide deck, and then on slide five as well with the HSBC, because I actually think the stories are connected here. So what happened on Friday was that the Evergrande management put out a very rare public statement or filing with the exchange where they said that their real estate operations were healthy, very low vacancy rates, cash flows were still coming through, they hadn't missed a single interest rate payment, and they had been reducing debt since March. The management simply won the confidence game over the weekend, and we are 17% higher. It's still something that we need to monitor, and the default rate and probability is still elevated. The Bloomberg's model has the model credit default swaps price at 320 basis points, which is pretty elevated. And it's a $120 billion debt company, so it clearly has systemic issues. And that statement on Friday, coupled with the statement Monday morning from Ping An Insurance, which is the largest insurance company in China, fully backing the HSBC business, saying that we believe in the long-term prospects and that the issue with foregoing the dividend payments is just a short-term issue, and will and the company or the bank will be back at paying out dividends very, very shortly as some of the economic pressures are alleviating. And to me, it seems like, as you sort of indirectly alluded to, John, it seems like a coordinated effort by major institutions in China to shore up. So clearly, you could sort of read through the lines and suggest that there was probably a lot of weakness coming into the weekend in the Chinese system around some of these issues. HSBC is a big bank, and Evergrande is a big real estate developer. So the coordinated efforts had really put some positive vibes through the Hong Kong trading. I think it's spilling over into Europe and US equity futures as well. But definitely something to watch, both companies.
Yeah, and another thing to watch here, and I think maybe at the root of some of all this, is the strength in the US dollar. And it's not showing any signs of letting up here. Very sort of firm bid, I think, across the board. So we're seeing some of these more liquid markets, risky assets bouncing a bit here, but the dollar is still quite at the firm end of the range. And I think in and of itself, that continues, becomes a factor in driving weak risk sentiment. And Ola, I was just noticing, I mean, if I look at an Aussie dollar chart or a gold chart over the last, let's call it 7-8 sessions, I have a hard time seeing the difference here. That gold sort of price action, you know, three pretty ugly days last week where it slid lower, and then just three tiny trading range days where we're just sort of treading water here flat. What are gold traders looking at here for inputs?
Well, I think we're trying to decipher what theme to latch onto right now, John. No doubt that the dollar strength and the divergence we saw in yields last week did not help the sentiment. We I think the bond yields are probably quite interesting right now. Even though we're seeing relatively stable nominal yields, stability is actually disguising a drop in break-evens and rising real yields. That's obviously not something that normally plays well for with gold. So that's one headwind right now. The dollar is another one. But then, as you mentioned, EM worries, a presidential debate coming up, plenty of potential support out there. So the key for now, I think, is still that we haven't really broken any key levels yet. The technical break below 1900 did attract some attention, but I think we need to break below this mid 30s, 1835-ish. That's really where we get the first challenge of the strength of this rally we've seen since the March low. So it's holding up relatively well so far today. Stocks are obviously trading higher. That's supporting, but we need to see yields and the dollar stabilize.
Okay, and I mentioned Aussie dollar there. So focus there on the 0.70 level, a very big chart level going back quite some time. So have a look if that's coming under pressure and closing below. I think we're talking about a more major breakdown, and I'm already seeing a lot of pressure on the fundamentals around behind that trade, the reflationary narrative, some of the key commodity prices still under pressure, whether iron or otherwise. So I think this dollar story is, there's a lot there. And if we look at euro dollar, the sort of chart focus is not huge yet. We have to get into 115 and below before we're talking about a major reversal. And actually I want to mention EM, but I want to actually get back to euro and the banks, Peter, in a second. But if we look at euro dollar, again, 115 slide 3, you can see that massive level. And if you take a longer term chart, you can see how that's been a major level stretching back a couple of years. But if you look at dollar ruble, slide 4, really a strong rip into the close on Friday. One of the EM currencies under the most pressure, and that's despite a quite stable oil market. I think there's some concern here that the U.S. presidential election is shaping up dramatically in favor of Biden, and the fear that a Biden president would be, let's remember, while presidents may have a hard time doing policy on the domestic front, if they don't have both houses of Congress on side, they have a very easy time doing foreign policy and measures against foreign powers. And I think that the Democrats have a bone to pick, let's put it that way, with Russia. So interesting to see that level of pressure relative to where it was in the March crisis. You can see on the chart on slide 4. So I think Russian assets will be interesting to watch here around this general dollar squeeze higher. And Peter, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, John, if I just want to finish off the euro-dollar story, because I think it was quite interesting to see last week that in the cut update, which only covers speculative positions in FX futures, it's on slide 7. The break below 117, which one potentially would have thought would have attracted some short covering buying of dollars, actually did the complete opposite. As we can see up in the week up until last Tuesday, the net dollar short actually increased by, I think it was around 6%, primarily due to buying of euros, Swiss, and yen. Yen is not surprising because that's the only currency that was actually trading high against the dollar last week. But the fact that the euro, even though we're breaking into some odd and certain territory, that this has initially been taken as a buying opportunity, that obviously doesn't bode well for if we continue to break lower and down to the levels that you mentioned, then really we could see that we have not even seen the short covering start to hit the market yet.
Yeah, and the European recovery story is really struggling here. You've got the ECB trying to pull out all the support, all the stops to support banks with these minus 1% loans to them to lend into the economy. The market's not having any of it if you look at how they're pricing banks. So there's clearly a widespread concern here. Peter, you've pulled out a truly long-term chart, I think one of the longest-term charts we've ever featured in our slides. Going back to the 1980s, this European banking index sitting at 1987 lows. What is the sense here? What's driving this weakness in European banks? Marking down assets?
It's a marking down of assets. It's basically a roller coaster for this sector in the first half of the year due to the COVID-19 fears. Around $100 billion in net revenue has been slashed from estimates from 2020 and 2021 for these banks. There's a $95 billion spike in consensus around provisions, which is definitely outweighing the $30 billion of expense cutting that have taken place in the industry. So you're looking at an industry with a price to tangible book value below a half of the entire index. You have a huge balance sheet, which has very poor quality in terms of its collateral value. You have an outlook for the continent, which is clouded in a lot of uncertainty around not only the Brexit, with the news last week that both JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs are moving operations at a faster pace and in bigger sizes to Frankfurt in Germany. So a big win for Germany there. So this whole Brexit will end in a catastrophe, I think, for London and its financial industry, at least around some parts of the financial operations and the inner workings of that industry will be moved to the continent. But then the whole COVID-19 resurgence, we're seeing a doubling of daily new cases in Stockholm, which apparently should have higher herd immunity than many other places in Europe. We're seeing new daily records across a number of countries, and I think there's just a general sense of uncertainty how this will impact the European economy and its banks. And you have to remember that European banks are per definition Main Street, because we don't have a very liquid corporate bond issuance market, only among the major corporations here in Europe. So all loans, all economic activity in Europe flows through the banks, and when you see banks are deteriorating and not doing well, it's because the Main Street in Europe is not doing well. So I think we're looking into a disease here that we need to solve. And the news, I think a couple of weeks ago, with Danske Bank spending 13% of all its operating expenses on compliance. So hiring people, creating systems that which only obligation is to just check other people's work that you are in compliance, is just mind-boggling numbers. And it's going up and higher for other banks as well. So at one point, I think the ECB, and as we talked about in an internal meeting, this is not sustainable. So I wonder whether at one point the ECB and the EU Commission will look at this and flag it as a real potential issue. I think it actually holds back opportunities and a strong economic growth in the future, because we simply need the banks to create credit and business opportunities.
Need a more generous, proper bailout that the Eurozone never got, I think it would be one step. But it's one of those things that the Europeans just seem to have a hard time doing, relative to the style of response you saw in the global financial crisis when the Fed splashed hundreds of billions directly into the banks. Grim story there. Ola, let's before I wrap it up with the calendar, anything we're watching on oil that's going to move the market? I mean, it just seems really stuck here.
It is very stuck. I think it's a couple of observations from last week's price action. We did have that warning to short sellers at the OPEC Plus meeting 1.5 weeks ago, and the result was of that threat was really seen last week. And again, referring to the cut report, which you can find on analysis.saxo, we saw that there's quite an increase in net buying last week, both in WTI and Brent. But as you can see in the small insert, most of that change was driven by a reduction in short positions. So short sellers did take note, they cut the shorts, market rallied, but since then it's we come back down again. So it does obviously highlight that the short covering can have an impact on the market, but overall fundamentals will always be the key source of inspiration. And the fundamentals right now, they are weaker. We're seeing quite a pickup in production coming out of Libya after they lifted the embargoes on exports, and with the COVID-19 cases still on the rise and the impact that it has on demand, oil is not going anywhere fast. So just for today, this week, you can see we're stuck between 43 to 50 to the upside. That's where we got the 50 and the 200-day moving average coming together. And to the downside, to right at this current level of 39.50, which I believe was more or less the low so far today. That's the 100-day moving average. But really, not 39.50. That's it's the 39.50 is the key level to the downside. But we've just been kissing the 100-day today, so we're stuck, as you say, trading sideways. But I think the upside potential at this stage is limited unless OPEC Plus brings a surprise.
Okay, let's look at the calendar for this week. I think it's going to be an interesting week on a couple of fronts. We have this latest German CPI, the flash CPI data for September, out tomorrow, followed by the Eurozone one later in the week. 0.0% expected on the year-on-year. We're seeing Eurozone inflation missing to the downside ECB has a tough task ahead of it to get this going in the right direction. I've noticed the ECB chief economist Lane is out all week speaking. We don't have those on here, but watch out for anything he says. I think he's the policy maven of the ECB. And then the highlight of the week, I believe, will be the Biden-Trump first debate tomorrow, very late in the U.S., so even later for us and here in Europe, but we'll be watching that closely. We need to watch these polls, which have been remarkably stable. And if they stay so after this first debate, I suspect we're looking, if they have any reflection of reality, looking at a strong Biden win, and maybe over volatile or overwrought expectations around the election, if that margin of victory for Biden does prove strong enough. But we'll get to that later. And then all the usual important stuff for the first of the month, with also, let's not forget, this being the end of the quarter, just in general across markets, as we look forward to the ISMs starting on Thursday around the world, and then on Friday, the latest U.S. Monthly jobs numbers, although it feels like these have been very poor in quality, so we continue to watch those weekly numbers as more interesting for the latest trajectory of the U.S. labor market. For now, let's see where things settle as we head into tomorrow. That's it for today, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. For today, thanks for joining.